VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And we are here live and in color as usual. And Adam's patting down his microphone.
Whoops.
And there's just so much to do. You know, it's going to be a fun day. I can just tell. Anyway, for our regulars, thanks for coming back. Without you guys, we would not really have a good reason to get up and do this every week, but with you, you make it fun. For all the new people, whether you found us on purpose, by accident, or whatever, try to stick around for the hour, and maybe you'll learn a few things that can help you be a little bit more efficient with your life and your spending and your investing and all those things we talk about, because let's face it, there aren't many topics that cover a wider variety of people than money.
I think it hits just about everybody.
We all need it. Most of us like it.
Wish I had more of it.
I'll meet someday. Yeah. I'll meet somebody someday who doesn't like it, but I haven't yet. And I've been looking. Anyway, today, aside from the really good times, we're going to discuss some lunacy and some various and sundry topics. A lot of things out there are really hot. And what always happens, it seems, is when we get into a period where the market is really booming, you wind up getting a lot of questions from clients. And we had a stream of them this week. And I think that they're shared by a lot of people. And we're going to hit some of those and give you the answers as to how we view these things. There is a lot of what I call acrophobia. If you look it up, it says fear of heights. A lot of investors are thinking that this stock market is a little lofty, and that's introducing a combination of fear and greed, and either one of them to excess is not a good thing. So let's take a real look today at what's going on and why it's going on and what it really means to most of us, what to do about it, what to monitor, what not to panic over, and a bunch of that stuff. So we'll discuss those things and anything else. Now, those are the things we want to talk about. And unless you pick up the phone and dial 904-222-TALK, it's 222-8255, that's what we will talk about. But if you would like to change the editorial policy, shift directions, get your own questions asked instead of other people's, all you got to do is pick up the phone. As always, the rules remain the same. Callers go to the head of the line immediately. They're number one priority above the two of us, above market statistics, above everything. So if you got some questions, just pick up the phone and call. There are no stupid questions. In fact, the easier they are, the better we look, and that's your job to make us look good. So trust me, whatever you don't know, there's a heck of a lot of people listening that don't know either. They're just afraid to ask. All right, this week, I was just crushed on Wednesday. Woke up, and the market futures were down.
Well, we'll call it an anomaly.
It was indeed an anomaly. It looked like we were going to have a horrible day. And then along about noon, well, maybe not so much. And by the end of the day, it was almost a non-event, only to be followed by, I guess we forgot about Wednesday, by Thursday and Friday, huh?
Yeah, exactly. I thought maybe we'd see some consolidation this week after Wednesday, but not so much.
The problem with all that is that the news is so good.
It is. Every time you turn on the news, someone's getting a bonus somewhere.
Yep, or a move of a factory back into the country or whatever. But anyway, let's go into a little more detail about what actually happened in the market, and I'll let Adam tell you all about it.
So we had our first full week of the new year, 5 new trading days, and we had 4 new all-time highs. So this is something I could get used to, but I better not, because you know it won't last. But it really is fun right now. Yeah, this is the most fun we've had since we started our business 3 years ago. It's just been a really incredible time in the market. We wrapped up another great week on Friday. All 3 major indexes gained more than 1.5% for the week. The Dow led the way, gaining 2%. The NASDAQ was up 1.7, and the S&P was up 1.6. In 9 trading days now for the year, the S&P is up over 4%, and the NASDAQ is up over 5%. So that's, in a lot of cases, that's a really good year.
Yeah, it's been a really good year many, many years.
Energy, consumer discretionary, and industrials have led the rally, with real estate, utilities, and telecom all losing ground. Energy is up over 7% this year to date, kind of reversing the trend for most of last year outside of the last couple months of the year. So if you sold off all your energy thinking that it would never come back, probably a bad move. But if you rebalanced at the end of the year, you're probably pretty happy.
In fact, that's one of my topics today, is how to think about those things.
As we mentioned last week, U.S. markets are not the only markets going higher. International markets are also climbing. In fact, one of our favorite international funds, Oakmark International, O-A-K-I-X, it's a mutual fund, is up 5.4% from the beginning of this year, which is more than any of the three big U.S. indices. The Russia market is still leading the way, and the ETF that tracks it, EWU, is up 9.76% this year alone, and Italy is not far behind at 8.66%. That ETF is EWI.
Yeah, Russia's market is so energy dependent, and it's saturated by energy, and in a period of time where energy is correcting itself and coming back more toward normal, I'm hardly surprised.
Yeah, I'm not either, but Italy was a little bit of a surprise.
Italy's got to be based on something else.
Yeah, and I'm not sure.
I haven't figured it out either.
Maybe just the fact that the EU as a whole has not performed very well over the last 5-6 years. Maybe it's just a little bit of catch-up, reversion to the mean.
Yeah, there's some news in fiat that might be helping Italy too. Maybe things are just going really well. So I'm not sure. I'm speculating.
Oil continues to climb this year, with USO, the ETF that tracks the price of oil, up 6.87%. And natural gas is up even further, with UNG climbing 8.17% in January. Gold and silver are both positive on the year, up 2.75 and 1.69 respectively. Not too bad. Some small gains. It still has a long way to go to reverse the decline of the last 3 years, but looks like it might be gaining some traction. Treasuries have been falling this year, with short-term treasuries down just over 0.1%, and 20-plus-year treasuries down almost 2% this year. The total bond market, measured by BND, the ETF that tracks that, is down almost 0.6%. So it could be a combination of things, the rate hike, the flight to risk, everyone selling bonds and going into stocks because they've been so hot. But they aren't huge losses, but it is down a little bit, so just kind of keep an eye on that. The fourth quarter of 2017 earnings season is just getting underway, and this is the most bullish analysts have been on U.S. companies in a long time. Next week, we'll see a bunch of big bank stocks report, including Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, and Morgan Stanley. We're also going to see reports from CSX, United Health, IBM, Schlumberger, and others. So that'll be really interesting going into this earnings season to see how we do, because expectations are kind of through the roof, and that is sometimes a setup for disappointment. But
how
were
the early reporters coming in, some of the financials and such? They're looking okay?
So far, so good, but it's really just a handful of companies, and it could change drastically starting next week.
Okay. Well, we're hoping to be in the third quarter of 3% plus growth and sneaking up on 4% growth. If that's going to turn out to be true, it's going to be because earnings are accelerating and people are spending more money, getting ready for bigger and bigger businesses.
And remember that the tax bill will not affect this quarter because it happened.
That's correct.
This is last year's year-end quarter.
Exactly. All that's still to come into play in the current quarter, which won't be reported till this time 3 months from now. And it should be very interesting because the IRS has announced that its withholding tables are, the ink is still wet, but they believe they're done with them.
I've got the first round open.
Oh, good. We'll talk about that right after the break. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Vanway Financial Hour.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this segment and its trivia question are brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. At 636-7888. question today, kind of long, but as usual, I do have a point. What do AAON, AccuWeather, Advanced Financial, Aflac, Alaska Airlines, Amarillo National Bank, AmeriCollect, American Airlines, American Bank, American Community Bank and Trust, American Savings Bank, Anfinson Farm Store, Aquesta Financial Holdings, AR-15 Gun Owners of America, Associated Bank, AT&T, and Atlas Air Worldwide have in common?
Not much.
Generally speaking, that would be a good way to put it, but specifically not so much. I also want to mention that this Monday is a holiday, so this is the weekend where we honor the very much too short life's work of Martin Luther King Jr., who understood a lot more things than he ever gets credit for, and one of them is the value of the individual and the individual contribution to not only yourself, but also to society. And it's at this time of year, I always like to remind people that great man was a lifelong Republican.
That is true.
How about that? All right, that said, Adam has some early evidence that you are going to take home more money starting February 1st because the initial round of the withholding tables has actually been released, and we have it.
I love giving news like this. Yeah, so in February, you might see your paycheck increase. And according to Rick Newman, who's a columnist with Yahoo Finance, he put out a little table that shows how much, give or take, you should see an increase in your paycheck if you get paid bimonthly, which means twice a month. And you make $60,000, it comes to a $56 increase starting in February. That turns out to be $112 per month or $1,344 per year increase in your paycheck for doing absolutely nothing.
And that is after-tax money.
It is. Now, that doesn't take into account individual withholdings. If you contribute to a 401k or anything like that, it's going to be different. But that is just the baseline number should be about $112 per month. Now, if you make $150,000, your increase would be closer to $187 per paycheck. So,
well, that's not fair.
Okay. And if you make $1 million, the increase would actually be $1,362 per paycheck. So it does go up as your income goes up, which is not surprising. But even at the $10,000 per year, you're still going to see an extra $6 or $12 a month in your paycheck. So good news across the board. There isn't any of these where your actual income goes down. So that's really good news for everybody with a job.
Yeah, how about that? Or there's good news for people without jobs, too. You're probably going to be able to get one.
Well, that's also true.
And it'll pay you more if you do. How about that? All right, I mentioned just briefly last week, I wanted to mention it again. Starting in April this year, you will be getting new, well, when I say you, I'm talking to the 65s and up out there. You will be receiving new Medicare cards from the government. It'll take a year to phase them in. Now, one of the things that I've been very disturbed about since I turned 65 a few days ago, weeks, months, whatever. Anyway, Medicare cards have your Social Security number on them. Now, who's going to walk around without their Medicare card in their wallet? I can't think of anybody because you never know when you're going to need it.
Absolutely.
What if you're in a car accident or something? You have to produce it's your main insurance for most people. You got to produce your health insurance card. And there it is for all to see with your Social Security number on it. So a lot of us have been complaining for a long, long time. I have the format of the new one, and it is a randomly generated number. The sample they use, which is absolutely meaningless, but it gives you the idea, says 1EG4-TE5-MK72. Now, they're not going to figure out who you are by that.
Nope.
And that is a good thing. Now, when you get your new card, I strongly suggest that you shred, burn, or otherwise get really rid of the old one. You don't want it hanging around with that number on it. Anything we can do to protect our Social Security numbers against the ravages of all the very clever criminals out there is a big plus for all of us. So I wanted you to be aware that it's happening. Look for it and treat it properly.
That's a good step. I would like to see them go to an app that's protected by a password or your thumbprint that you actually just pull it up on your phone so you don't have to carry around anything like that. I also still would like to get rid of the Social Security number, which is great, but why even have a card?
Yeah, pretty soon they'll just implant a little chip in your body and you'll have it all. But that's another story for another time, perhaps. All right, where do I begin? All the things we've been hearing lately in the office, a lot of it has to do with how high this market is. So I copied down some of the things that we have been asked lately, and we're going to talk about them for just a little bit. How about this one? Will 2018 have the growth that 2017 had? I always answer a question with a question. Everybody knows that. My first question would be, do you mean in the business climate or do you mean in the stock market?
I assume the question was directed towards the stock market.
Generally speaking, when you're talking to investors, that's true. So let's look at the other side of the coin first. What do you think is going to happen this year compared to last year as far as growth in the economy?
I think you're going to see a substantial increase.
And I agree with that. What then should be the impact on the stock market?
Well, that's a lot harder.
That's why I said should be.
Yeah. Well, some of that or even most of it might already be priced in. You just don't know.
It's possible.
But
especially after the last 2 weeks.
In general, as the economy goes, the market goes. I mean, look no further than 2008. As the economy tanked, so did the market. Mm-hmm. And then as the economy started to grow after that, the market came back as well. So they should go hand in hand. I'm not going to say it'll happen for sure.
The concept there of the market pricing something in is almost a slam dunk because the market is always collectively several months ahead of today. They're looking down the road 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, saying, what do I think it's going to be? And as I've said the last couple of weeks, very often you get they say the camel is a racehorse designed by a committee. The more people in the room, the dumber the room gets. But when you get something as big as the stock market and the people around the world who are in it, it gets incredibly smart. It is almost always right. Now, this market is obviously pointing down the road saying, what I see for later this year is nothing but wonderful. If they get validated as time goes by, they'll keep looking forward saying, there's no reason this should be over yet. So our answer is always something to the tune of this. What changed? So let's say somebody comes up to us and says, I think I should sell or something like that. And my first question then would be, what changed? Was it you? Was it the market? Was it the economy? Was it the politics? The weather? What is it? What changed? If you remember, let me make sure I get the year right. January 15, the bad start? Or 16?
16.
Where the first about 6 weeks?
I believe it was 16.
The year before ended up really nicely. It was a great year. We opened January 2nd, and the market went straight down, and it went down and down and down, and it lasted about 6 weeks. And every day, while we were trying to prevent panic inside the office, every day we'd look at each other and say, what changed? And every day we'd look back at each other and say, nothing. Then what do you do logically? Stay the course. We did, and all of a sudden, in middle February, it was like it hit the trampoline and just rebounded and shot straight up. We had it all back in March, and it went on to be a wonderful year. Well, whenever you see something like that happening, you either have to find a reason for it or possibly make a mistake. Doesn't mean we're always going to get it right. But that's what happened then. Right now, I'm not seeing anything that I believe is going to cause a great big change. So another question we've been getting, what if the Feds raise interest rates? You want to address that?
They're going to do it. It's going to happen this year. It's been happening over the last few years, very, very slowly. And it's going to happen this year probably 3 times. That's my best guess.
If I had to throw a dart at something, I'd try to hit the 3.
And again, I think it's more than justified. I think they should have gone up faster prior to this. But the fact is, certain things will happen. Will stocks react? That's a maybe. But will bonds react? Yes, they will. You will see some dips in your bond prices or your bond fund prices. And then you'll see those bonds get replaced with higher yielding bonds, and eventually it will come back. But there is going to be that reaction.
So continue to keep your bond funds and bond holdings a relatively short duration. They will be hurt less. They will be turned over more often. The new bonds that are issued at higher coupon rates.
You'll see your yields
you'll
go
be fine.
Up.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Now, a lot of people don't remember. What is a normal interest rate? For 10 years, we've had interest rates that were almost non-existent. One of the downsides of having these almost zero interest rates, ZIRP as they call it, zero interest rate policy, is that a lot of older people who were long-term successful CD investors, they've saved all their lives, all they want is a nice little steady income, something to live on. Well, starting about 10 years ago, those people's yields fell to nothing as they came due, and they had to be replaced. And I'll talk a little bit more right after the break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
AM
Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Things will be growing very soon. Call Troy at 662-9794. All right, we've been talking about some of the real life, real people questions that we've been asked lately, and they're coming quicker and quicker, and some of them are more insightful than ever. And it's because the combination of fear and greed that's taking over right now, which is absolutely understandable. I think everybody's affected with a little bit of each, actually. We don't want to miss out, but we sure don't want to tip over the top and drop the ball either. So people are asking some really good questions. And Adam and I were just looking at a graph he's got over the break, and it's very interesting. It took the S&P results over a long period of time, and it showed the last year, that fabulous last year, 2017, and put it in perspective. And you can probably summarize it better than I can.
Yeah, so what it does is it shows the number of record highs that were produced by the S&P every year during the last 3 decades, so 30 years. And then it also put that in the same chart as yearly performance. And last year there were 64 all-time highs on the S&P. And the yearly performance was just under, looks like about 25%. And so that is the third highest number of record highs. However, the performance is way below most of the other years. For instance, in 1995, the record highs stood at closer to 90. But the performance was over, it looks like, they don't have the exact number, but it looks like over 30-35%. So yes, we saw a lot of record highs last year, but the market performance was not as lofty as you might expect. In fact, there were several, it looks like at least 10 years, where the number of record highs was actually significantly lower than last year, but the performance of the S&P was higher than it was last year.
So that should ease a few minds. Now, what happens is we get kind of lost in the nature of mathematics. When the Dow's at 2,000 and goes to 3,000, it's only a 1,000-point increase, but it's 50%. But when it's at 24,000 and goes to 25,000, it's a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, it's really not. And we've been saying that a lot as we reach these milestones, but a 1,000-point move on the Dow is not nearly what it used to be.
No, and remember, while we're telling you all this stuff, we're just trying to put it in perspective. I'm not trying to make anybody get lazy or fat and happy or any of that stuff. I just don't want you to be terrified by the number that says on the screen 25,000. Remember when we were all afraid that the market had peaked because it hit 16,000, then 17, 18, and certainly at 20,000, that had to be it, right? In fact, I stuck my neck out a year ago right now and said that I predict that the market will this year, meaning 2017 at the time, that this year sometime the Dow will touch 22,000. I didn't say it would close over 22. I just said it would touch it. Well, it did, and didn't look back from there to 23 and then 24 and then 25. And what's going on? Well, I would be worried sick if nothing were going on. But nothing is not going on, if you'll excuse all my negatives. Something is going on, and that something is very good, and it's called pent-up demand for people, labor, products, customers, growth in business, everything. This economy has been stagnant for about 10 years now, stagnant to declining, and even the little tiny bit of growth rate we had over those years, it wasn't enough to even keep up with population growth, which means we're way behind where we were 10 years ago economically, and a little bit of catch-up is just what the doctor ordered.
Absolutely. It's the same theory that we've been applying to the housing market. We overbuilt for a while, but now we've severely underbuilt for 10 years plus. And that is why you're seeing your house price rise at a rate faster than inflation right now. And it has continued. And people get worried that we're in another bubble, but there's still so much pent-up demand that we think that the housing market is still very healthy.
How quickly a market finds its level again depends a lot on the time it takes for replacement. When you're talking about a stock market, it can correct or find a level in hours, certainly days. But when you're talking about a housing stock countrywide, it's a long replacement system. If demand rises 15% and we're building 2% more houses a year, it's going to take a long, long time for that pricing structure to even out.
Yeah.
The pipeline's got to get filled.
If you listen to Angela and Howard's show before us, they talk about it every week in a different context, but what they're saying is the same thing. I heard several stories on their show right before us about bidding wars and multiple bidding situations, and that is a direct result of pent-up demand.
And I don't remember a time in a long, long time when I've heard so many stories about houses selling the day that they're listed, having bidding wars and that kind of thing. And quite frankly, that's very much preferable to the alternative.
Oh, we've lived through the alternative, and it was not pretty.
Have we ever. Short sales and
foreclosures.
It was awful. Anyway, back to interest rates. Over the past 10 years, as CDs came due and so on, there have been a lot of older people who were never in their lives risk takers. They planned their lives that way. They invested that way. And they were very comfortable. They went from outrageous CD rates in the late 70s, early 80s, where they could be 8, 10, 12, 14%. And they came back to a more normal level of 4, 5, 6%, which is where interest rates like to hover in the long term. They react when the economy makes them react because something's out of balance. Well, over the last 10 years, the artificial ZERP that the Fed has put on us, a zero interest rate policy, when those people went to the credit union because they had a CD coming due, and they were making 5%, and now it's 5 years later, and they're going to make 0.1%, and all of a sudden, they have no income. And we have seen a lot of those people in our business over the years who come to us and say, help, what do I do? And I said, there's only one answer. Well, there's two answers if you include living less well, and I never include living less well as an answer because it's unacceptable.
Well, we wouldn't be doing our jobs if that was the first answer.
I said, you have to take more risk. More return can only be gotten by taking more risk. And in financial terms, what risk means is variability of returns. The riskier assets are commodities at the high end, stocks below those, bonds below those, and cash below that. So they have to move up from the cash scale into the short-term bond yields. Well, they're pretty pathetic too. Mm-hmm. So if you really wanted to get back in your 3, 4, 5, 6 range, that meant you had to go into risk assets like dividend stocks. A lot of people didn't want to be there, but they got there. And sure enough, some things happened just kind of like the Fed was hoping. The demand for those stocks actually created a market where the market was rising the whole time and people were making their returns. That's still happening, but along the way now, interest rates are going to start, they have started, and they're going to start faster now, reaching a more normal level. And I, for one, will be a lot happier when older people who want to have at least a good section of their money cordoned off into the CD arena and so on, in other words, the risk-free zone, will be able to do so without being penalized like they are now. So is it a good thing that interest rates are rising? Absolutely. And that's why over the 3 years now that we've been doing this show, you've heard that from us for the whole time, that we want interest rates higher. It is not a bad thing. It is a sign of normalcy. And if there's one thing that I like in the financial arena, it's normalcy.
Yeah, and it's been a long, long ride to get here. I mean, 10 years plus at this point, just to get back to not even normal yet, but the road to normal. So okay. I'm very pleased. It also makes it very hard to do portfolio design when your entire asset class that you depend on for the safe, quote unquote, safe part of your portfolio doesn't yield anything. How do you work in that safe part? And you can't put your clients into all risky assets, and you can't get return from anything else. So it makes our jobs a lot more enjoyable when interest rates are normal.
That's the proverbial rock and the hard part that we've been caught between for quite some time. All right, I've got a few more of these, but there's a couple little things since we don't have much time. I want to bring up some changes that come from the tax law. A lot of people know that any real person is able to give any real person $14,000 a year without reporting it, without paying gift taxes on it, without filing a return. That moved up to $15,000 January 1. So any real person, which means not a trust, not this or that, it's got to be a real person, no dogs. A real person could give any other real person $15,000 now. The estate tax exclusion was also raised. I got a couple more of those, and we'll do that and a couple more of the questions and your calls right after the break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we still have our trivia question open. It's, what do all those companies from AAON all the way down the line to Atlas Air Worldwide have in common? And there are quite a few of them.
Yeah, it's not on the screen, but I think we have a caller.
Yeah, there's something there, but I don't see it on the screen. Oh, there we go. Good morning, Don.
Hey, Van Wee.
How are you?
I heard all your comments earlier, but I want to ask you a question.
Shoot.
What do you think the debt we have in Washington is going to play on the stock market this year?
Virtually none. I think the market is immune from it right at the moment. Unless, and I will give you one unless. Remember what happened Tuesday night that affected Wednesday morning? China put out a statement that they were going to either curtail or stop buying our treasuries.
Right.
Now, at 8 o'clock on Tuesday or Wednesday morning, I looked at my wife and said, no, they're not. Because what else are they going to do? They're going to continue doing just what they're going to do. That was a little bluster aimed at our relationship with the Koreas, in my humble opinion. And sure enough, the market shrugged it off. I do think that it should, I don't think that it will make a difference. And I've just been watching this too long. People just don't care. They just don't care.
Do you realize we're going to 21 trillion now?
Yeah, and the market went to 25,000. They're just big numbers. I think that's what people look at it. Well, it's just a number. Not realizing what it really is.
If there's a national crisis now.
Man, but is it? If we can still sell debt, there's no crisis. And I'm not saying I disagree with you. I'm playing the devil's advocate here in the market. I hope you understand that.
Both of us would love to see a balanced budget and no debt, but that's just not going to happen in the short term. And you always have to put national debt in terms of GDP.
Right.
So as a percentage of GDP, it is a little bit higher than it's been historically, but it's not substantially higher. So,
well, what I'm worried about is them turning the market around and aiming it square at me to pay for it.
It's going to be like turning the QE2. It's going to be really slow and gradual. I wouldn't worry about one day waking up to find out there's a debt crisis. Yes, you'll read Stansberry, read Davidson, read some of these people, and of course Dent. They're going to tell you you're going to wake up one day and your dollar is worthless and the whole world as we know it has changed. They're wrong. Don't even read those people. All they're trying to do is sell $359 a year subscriptions to their newsletters. That's it.
All right, buddy.
It's a really good question.
It is a wonderful question, and man, we are on your side. I want you to know that.
Did you hear the trivia question, Don?
Yeah, but I ain't good at that.
Okay.
I just like to hold on to my money. I don't want to be 6 months down the road in North Korea blast the West Coast with something.
I don't think it's going to happen.
Stock market then.
You know, I have an observation about Kim Jong-un. I've used it a couple times on air. I said he may be a problem for one day, but he won't be a problem for 2 days. Remember what Jim Mattis says? Nothing keeps me up at night. I keep other people up at night. I love
all
that
right,
guy.
Y'all have a good day, and thank you all very much. And I just wanted to put that across to you because it is close to $21 trillion now.
I know it is, and it's going to rise real fast next year, too, unfortunately. Take care of yourself. Thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
During the last segment, Adam had a listener hunt us up on Google feed and sent him a question. And we were talking about it a little bit on the break. And the more you talk about this question,
it's a great question,
the better it gets. So let's have you lay it out and we'll go through some discussion.
All right. So the question is, in a market like the current one, what is the best approach for RMD withdrawals if you don't need the money for expenses and if you're planning to invest it in an after-tax fund? Should you do it all at once at the end of the year or gradually all year by dollar cost averaging? And essentially what he's talking about is you have a certain amount of money you have to take out of your retirement funds every year if you're over age 70 and a half.
Let's simplify it with a number. Let's say it's $12,000. So you can take it out $12,000 now, $12,000 at the end, or $1,000 a month.
Right. So we were talking about it, and the assumption in the question is that the market is like the current market, which is a rising market. And in that case, it's better to leave it in your account until the end of the year because you get tax-deferred growth on that all year long. So if the market stays like it does, all that growth that you're going to get by having that money invested in an IRA or 401k will be tax deferred. So if you take it out and you invest it, all that money is going to be taxable to you. All that growth is going to be taxable to you when you sell that fund eventually.
Now, I think we should explain something. The amount of this year's RMD has already been fixed.
Right. It's not going to change.
It's based on December 31st value of 2017, what you have to take out in 2018. So it's not like if your IRA sits there and grows for 12 months and then you take money out, you're going to have to take more money out. You don't. You take exactly the same under any circumstances.
And the taxes will be the same whether you take it out in the beginning of the year, the end of the year,
it's
or month by month.
$12,000 at ordinary income tax.
Right. So all other things are equal in a rising market. Leave it until the end of the year.
Yeah. I can't think of many times, if any, the more I've been thinking about it, where I would say do that early in the year. If you want a rule of thumb, there's a thing in financial planning called the 98% rule. That means if you generalize, you're going to have to look to find an exception. The 98% rule applied to this situation would be you put the money in your IRA. You put it in at the beginning of the year, so it grows 12 months in a tax-deferred environment. You take it out at the end of the year, for very similar reasons, you let it grow for the year, and then you take it out, and it's the same amount of money with the same tax rate. Now, I will say a couple other things, too. If you need that money to live on, which was a given that this was not the case in the questioner, but if you need it, I like the monthly withdrawal thing.
Yeah, and also, if you are in a declining market, it actually does make sense to take it out month by month, I think, because then you would be buying dollar cost averaging down. So every month that you bought, you'd be getting a better deal on whatever it is you're buying in the after tax.
And situation. Even then, you'd have to sit down and really plan.
I'd have
to
run the numbers, but that was my first take on it.
And for those of you who pay quarterly tax estimates, you know that if you don't get the money in on your quarterly estimate at the right time, you can pay a timing penalty to IRS for not having it in time. So I want you to know that all withdrawals from IRAs, 401ks, 403bs, and so on are treated as if they came out on December 31st of the year in question.
So actually, in a declining market, if you took it out at the beginning of the year and invested it, you would get the capital loss on it. So that, I mean, I don't you like get, to invest think, for losses.
I think
but.
You're getting too smart by half.
Okay.
General rule, unless you can really conjure up a situation that would become the 2%, is put your money in as early as possible, take it out as late as possible, and you're seldom, if ever, going to go wrong.
Yeah, I would say that is a really good rule of thumb.
But that was such a good question, we wanted to bring it up. Let's see, I got another one here. What future do you see for construction equipment and materials? I put a one-word answer to that. Euphoria.
And that does not, that doesn't matter who's in office, because both parties, it's one little thing that they agree on is we need better infrastructure in this country, and yep, they're both ready to address it. Now, will the spending bills that come out be bipartisan? Doubtful. But do they both support it? Yes.
Yes, absolutely. All right. Now, no financial show in 2018 could possibly be complete without a Bitcoin discussion.
Of course.
So, do you buy Bitcoin or not? And we had an interesting one this week. One of our clients had purchased, you know, there are over 1,000 cryptocurrencies now. Bitcoin is the one everybody talks about. But he had invested about a month ago in a couple of smaller ones, and he was up about 40%. He said, should I sell? Well, those of you who've followed me for a long, long time know I never give you a direct answer without at least interrogation of some sort, right?
That's true.
I looked him in the eye and said, yes.
Yeah.
And that's exactly how I feel. And worst case is you made 40%. You could say worst case, I didn't make another 240%, but you got 40% in a month.
And
he also was looking to fund his wife's Roth IRA, and he said, I could use that money to do that. I said, great. Well, what if you put it in there, and then you take out all the money you invested in it, a 10% profit, and then you buy those things back again because you did like them, but you only use 90% of the profit, and you're playing with house money.
I like it.
Not bad, huh? All right, what do AAON, AccuWeather, Advanced Financial, Aflac, Alaska Airlines, Amarillo Bank, AmeriCollect, on and on and on, all the way down through AT&T and Atlas Air Worldwide have in common? They all reacted to the corporate tax cut by paying bonuses, raises, and increased minimums to all of their employees. Isn't that amazing? Think about it. That was only the A's, people. It's great. See you next week.